He's probably the greatest missionary pastor in this country for a long while, maybe still. His church was up in Massachusetts, I believe. He gave his version of the feeding of the 5,000. He said, according to the way we do things today, the feeding of the 5,000 went like this. There were 5,000 of them there, and he had them sit down in rows of 50. Remember that? There was 50, 50, 50, all the way as far as you can see, probably. He said, here they were. And remember, he's telling about the feeding of the 5,000, his version, relating to missions. He said, the disciples took the baskets, and they went to the first 50, the second 50, the third 50. They ran out of food, came back, got some more baskets, and they went to the same people, same 50. And the people in the back were saying, what about us? And the people in the back were saying, well, we can share a little bit with you. And that it went on like that. They'd come back and feed the same people. Some people were saying, well, I can take some of this home. So they're putting it in the bags. Ever seen anybody do that? Along with the pink stuff. Well, I've got to take that home with me. Or I could sell this. They're piling, sticking in, making money on this bread that was free to them, you know. Well, you see his point. His point was that, hey, we're doing the same thing. We're feeding the same people all the time if we aren't careful. Now, the question then is, whom are we feeding? Are we going to feed only these people? Or do we have our sights on people out there and people around the world we can't even see? I think that's what this passage is talking about. Expanding the work. Taking the message to other people who've never heard. Paul loved to do that. In fact, he said in several places that he wanted to go where the people had not heard the gospel because he was concerned about them. Well, this time we find Paul, remember from last week, we found Paul in Antioch. He had taken the message back, the result of the first church council on the conversion of the Gentiles. Gentiles did not have to be circumcised in order to be saved. And he was taking that back to Antioch, and they enjoyed that. They were just so happy that the Lord had called the Gentiles as well. So the plan, he had a plan for expanding the work, verses 36 to 40. First of all, how he was offered in verse 36. It was Paul's idea. His idea was, after some days, Paul said to Barnabas. It was Paul's idea. Well, Barnabas didn't say it. Paul did. See, remember before Barnabas, it was Barnabas and Saul. And then Barnabas is on. Then once in a while you see Saul and Barnabas. And then now it's Barnabas, it's Paul, and Paul is in control here. He's saying, I want to go. And so he was very busy there in Antioch, though, you know. He was busy teaching and preaching those people there and the people around. So was Titus was still there. And others were teaching the people. And there were people being saved all over the place. And all of that was going on. So I think what Paul saw was, you know, he could stay there. That would be a great ministry. But no, I need to go. Let's go elsewhere. Let's get this thing going somewhere else. So he was, there were others there to take care of the work. And that was his idea. Other people, I train these people. Now I can get out of here and do something else. So he trained them. And then he was going somewhere else to do this process, same process again. Get them saved, get them trained, get them out there. Paul used multiplication, not addition. If you attempt to get the gospel out by addition, you'll never get it done. You know, you win one, and then you go win another one, and then you win another one. That's fine, but that's not the way to get the Great Commission completed. Have to do it by multiplication. So I did some work on that. If you evangelized by yourself for a month, say, well, I'm going to get, so I, every month, you just, I'm going to, every day for a month. Well, you'd have 30. That's wonderful and great. I'd love to see 30 people saved in a month. And if everybody did 30 people, well, I have no argument with that. But you won't get the Great Commission done that way. So you do it by multiplication. See, if you win one person every day and then teach that person to win one every day. You see what's going to happen? By the end of 33 days, I got corrected on this 30 days, but at the end of 33 days, the world would be evangelized. Everybody would be saved. Well, according to the figures. And the fourth day, guess how many you'd have? The fifth day, you'd have 24 people. Whoa. We're 5 days into this thing, only have 24 people. 10 days, 768. 15 days, 24,000. That's a lot of people, but we've got billions to get here. The 20th day, 786,432. I'm doing this, and I had sent an email to Jim and said, Jim, how do you do that? And he was telling me, his answer said something about N. I don't know what N is, but Jim knows. Tell him. But I'm looking at this and saying, man, look at 25th day, 25 million. Man, we're getting there, aren't we? 25 million. 30th day, 1 million. We get the 30th day, 1 billion. See, I thought, well, we didn't get there. But the 33rd day, if I'm right, and I didn't check this back with Jim, 9 billion. How many people in the world? About 6 billion, you know? Well, by the 29th and 30th day and the 31st, you're going to be scrambling to find somebody that's not saved, you know? But in any case, what I'm saying to you is it's multiplication, not addition, that's going to get the job done. That was Paul's idea. Now, Paul's intent was, he says in verse 36b, let us return and visit the brethren in every city in which we proclaim the word of the Lord and see how they're doing. See, Paul had left believers there all over South Galatia, remember from the first missionary journey. And so he said, let's go back and see how they're doing. And he also needed to take that letter from the church council. He's supposed to take that to them. So that's what he was headed out to do. And then who else is he going to ask? Well, he's going to ask Barnabas. I've been working with Barnabas all this time. So Barnabas, let's go. Let's get this thing done. So he asked him. So that's how it was offered. He offered the plan. And then how it faltered. It faltered in verse 37 and 39a. We find a tentative agreement. Oh yeah, let's go. Barnabas said, yes, let's do that. Barnabas was determined to take with them John called Mark. So he's saying, yes, let's go. I'll go get Mark. No, that's not going to work, see. See, it seemed to Barnabas, he's all ready to go, but I want to go and take my nephew, or some say cousin, I'll say nephew. I want to get my nephew, and we'll get him there. Now, wonder why, well, he's his nephew, for one thing. But remember in the first journey, John Mark went away when the going got tough. He went back home to mommy, back in Jerusalem. So the contact they had, I think, remember when they were in the first church council, they went down to Jerusalem. And where do you think Barnabas stayed? Well, probably with his sister who lived there in Jerusalem. And so maybe John Mark talked to him and said, man, I really am sorry I left you, and I apologize for it. Is there any way I can get a second chance? And Barnabas said, I'll pray about it, and when something comes up, I'll let you know. So here's his chance. This is the chance for him to get John Mark and get him back in. So that's what he determined. But what he discovered was that Paul wasn't going to have any part of that. Verse 38 says, but Paul kept insisting that they not take him along, who had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. Now, where it says that Paul kept insisting means he didn't just insist one time. Maybe Barnabas brought up, well, what about this? No, he can't go. Well, maybe he can do it. No, he can't go. I could just see the argument. You know, Paul was dead set against this. So this ongoing discussion, and finally Paul just says, no, we're not going to do it. So no matter what Barnabas says, no, we're not going to do it. So that the partial disagreement became total disagreement here, verse 39a. And there occurred such sharp disagreement that they separated from one another. I want to tell you something. I want to tell you that everything in the early church was peaches and cream. They never had any problems. That's what I want to tell you. I can't tell you that because that's not true. There are personalities in the first century just as there are personalities in our century. And these personalities could not agree on whether to go with John Mark or not. And so their total disagreement said, no, we're not going to do it. Two good men, two godly men, but they were on the opposite sides of an argument and they would not budge, either one of them. So what's the answer? Well, each one of them has to follow his own direction. He's convinced of it, and so, okay, let's do it that way. So that's how it was offered, how it was faltered, and now how it was altered in verse 39b and 40. The departure of Barnabas, 39b. So Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus. That's one way to go. No indication that Barnabas received the church's blessing. There's no indication that he didn't, but later on we're going to see that Paul did get the church's blessing to go out. But Barnabas left anyway with Mark and went over to Cyprus, where they had gone before. That was Barnabas' home. That's where he lived. We know that from 4:36 of Acts. So, and John Mark had been there also, so it's a good place for them to go. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, that he didn't get the blessing. He might have gotten it. Now, the departure of Barnabas, now the decision of Paul. What's Paul going to do now? Well, Paul's going to do what he wanted to do. He's going to go. Verse 40 says, and Paul chose Silas and left. See, Silas was a prophet, remember. He'd been teaching there in Antioch, and whether he stayed there or not, we don't know, but at least he's there now and ready to go with Paul, and he's no novice in this whole thing. He's a good man to take along. And then they received the church commendation, 40, in verse B, or in 40B, then committed by the brethren of the grace of the Lord. So the brethren committed them just as they did before. Remember, they put the hands on them and sent them off on the first missionary journey. They're sending Paul off the same way. And I think that I don't say Barnabas was wrong and Paul was right. I'm just saying that they both went and did their thing, and God's going to bless both of them. And Luke is really not giving us Paul's life. He's giving us what Paul is doing. And from now on, it's going to be Paul all the way through. What happened in Paul's life? So I think that the fact that he doesn't mention Barnabas any longer doesn't mean that Barnabas didn't do anything further. All right, so the church's commendation, they sent them off. They committed them to the grace of God. So who was right in the argument? Well, I think they were both right in their assessment of Mark, John Mark. Maybe Paul saw that maybe John Mark is not ready. He's a Jewish little fellow, and he's been there in Jerusalem, and he's not ready to go with a pro-Gentile apostle to the Gentile world. Maybe that certainly would be reasonable. And Barnabas was correct when he saw the material that was in his nephew, Mark. So he takes him along, and later on, he's justified. John Mark did some great things. One thing was he wrote the book of Mark. So he's not a bad person. And so Colossians 4:10 and several other places, we read that Barnabas was right in his assessment of the raw material that was there. And then later on, Paul spoke of Barnabas in a positive way, in Colossians 4:10 and in 1 Corinthians 9:6. So this argument, this disagreement that they had, finally wound up with two missionary teams. Talk about multiplication. Now we have two missionary teams. They're going different places. Two over here and two guys here and two guys here. And they're going to different places to minister the word. Now that brings up a question. If it all came out right, in fact, we came up with missionary, two missionary teams, then everything's fine. Whatever they did in that argument was fine. No, not true. If Paul did something that was not right, if he called him if he did all that, then he was wrong. Just because it turns out right doesn't mean that everything you did in there was wrong, was right. That's what I'm saying. Not the end justifies the means. If it's right, if it turns out right, praise the Lord. But don't get the idea that just because it turned out right, that whatever I did was right. Not necessarily. All right, so that's the plan for expanding the work in 15. Now, in 1541 and then through 6:5, we find the progress for expanding the work. There was the high road. And by high road, I have in mind the traveling over the mountains. They were traveling through Syria and Cilicia and strengthening the churches. And Paul came also to Derbe and Lystra. Now, you see here that Paul was here in Antioch. Instead of going over this way like Barnabas did, he went up this way. And we said when we were talking before that in Perga and Derbe here, he could have gone, he was closer to home than going way back over here like he did and came back on this way. It was a longer trip. So, but he went this way and went through his own hometown and so forth, and then back through the same places where he had been before. That's the idea. Now, so Paul went overland through Syria to his hometown and then to the other churches in reverse order of where he had gone before. Now, in the process, they passed over the Tarsus Mountains through the Cilician gates. It was an uphill, and over a high road way to go. There was a high point in that trip, and that is, they found Timothy. And we see the faithful beginning or commencement of Timothy. There was a certain disciple, this is verse 36, this is 41. 1541. Right. A certain disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a Jewish woman who was a believer, but his father was a Greek. Now, there's a certain disciple. Paul calls Timothy his son. Now, there's no indication that he led Timothy to the Lord himself, but it was through his ministry there in the first missionary journey that Timothy became a believer. And so Paul was his father in the sense of he was with him all the time and he trained him in that sense. I have several of my students who are my most father, in fact, a father figure. They've said that. Oh, you're like a father to me. And so, but that kind of thing, I think, is what he's talking about. Timothy was his son in that sense. So he was also Titus' spiritual father, though he certainly didn't lead him to the Lord. So the faithful commencement of Timothy, and then the fine commendation of Timothy. It has been a few years since Paul was there, and he finds Timothy, and he finds that he is well spoken of by the brethren who were in Lystra and Iconium. So he's well spoken of. The people there, the people in two different cities, think well of him. That he was saved is a credit to Paul, first missionary journey somewhere along the line, and he was a believer for a few years, but then he's spoken of well. A young man, well spoken of by the leaders of the churches there. So he had a fine commendation, but he had a full commitment. Verse 3. Says, and Paul wanted to have him go with him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews that were in that region, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. Now, Paul wanted him to go along with them as a helper, along with Paul and Titus, and pretty much like John Mark had done. And there was one snag. He wasn't circumcised yet. Whoa. He was a Jew. His mother was a Jew. And but this appears to contradict what Paul did in the previous chapter, Remember? Oh, no, you don't have to be circumcised to be saved. Now he's having somebody circumcised. Well, there's a difference. In the first place, in Galatians, when he said, I didn't have Titus circumcised, Titus was a Gentile. So there's no, and we're talking about here, we're not talking about justification, salvation by circumcision for justification, for salvation. So that's what they were talking about then. No, sir, we will not circumcise him for salvation. You don't have to be circumcised in order to be saved. But here, it's a question of not giving an offense. There are Jews in the area, and if Paul's going to minister, he always went to the synagogue first, and to have someone there who was not circumcised, that would be a problem to the Jews. And so, being a Jew, we're going to circumcise him so that it doesn't make any problem for the ministry. That's what I think he's saying. Paul would say, another place, I'm all things to all men, that by all means I may save some. That's his idea, I think. So, Timothy was a part of this decision, remember. You don't give, we'll just give him a local anesthetic. Won't feel a thing. No, sir. A sharp stone. He had to agree to that, and he did. So we give him credit for that. So that's the high point. Now the highlights. He goes through all these various places. Verse 4 says that as they went through the cities, they delivered to them the decrees to keep, which were determined by the apostles and the elders of Jerusalem. So the local churches were enlightened. They gave them that decree, and they also gave them the teaching. Remember, that's where the legalists were who chased Paul out of those places. They were there, and Paul had he wrote Galatians to them and said, no, you don't have to be circumcised in order to be saved. So it was very important that he go there and teach them, and he did. Then the Jerusalem letter was simply proof that he was correct on his position on circumcision. So the local churches were enlightened, but they were also encouraged. So the churches were strengthened in the faith. They're strengthened. How were they strengthened? By the word. They taught the word, strengthened them, so that he could go on from there. This resulted in their witnessing. You get people strengthened in the word, and they have to tell it to other people. They have to. They have to, he said. In any case, they did. They were out there witnessing to people, and the people came in. And that's the biblical method of church growth. Train the people. The people get the word out. And this multiplication goes on. So the churches were enlightened. They were encouraged. And they were also enlarged. They increased in number daily. See the order. They taught, strengthened, enlarged. That's what we're talking about. And that's what Paul is after. I'll go back and strengthen these people. He's not going to stay there long. He's going to go through, preach the word, strengthen them, and then go on to further things. Now, what do you think Paul's going to do next? Where do you think he'll go? He's going to go to Europe. Europe? Yeah. Paul's going to go to Europe. He wanted to go to Spain, he says. I don't know if he ever got there or not. Some people think he did. I don't know. There's time after Paul was in the in prison the first time, he was released. And then he was taken back later. But in that period between the two Roman imprisonments, we don't know where he went. We know some places where he went. In fact, in prison epistles, in about page 25 or so, you'll find Paul's fifth missionary journey. And I traced that through there on where Paul went from the time he was released from prison till the time he was re-imprisoned, re-incarcerated. So take a look at that. It's there. Come in anytime. We'll show you. So he's going on to Spain, maybe. Some people even think he went to the British Isles. I don't know. But he went, I know some of the places he went. I do know that he went to the United States of America. That didn't wake you up? He went there. He's here today by 13 other epistles that he wrote. Oh yeah, he had quite a ministry. You're here because Paul was there. You know? And he was there in here in this place, not in person, but in those 13 epistles, and maybe number 14 where he at least had a part in that one. See? So the ministry of Paul was get out there where the get them where they ain't, you know, where they aren't saved. So we learn from Paul, take care of the souls that you win. Don't let them flounder. Teach them to win others. A person who's won to the Lord ought to be taught, teach others, go to the Lord, reach them. And then don't neglect those on the back row, you know, the mission field. Now, why am I stressing mission? Well, I think it's there. Also, because Lottie Moon is coming up. Well, the Lottie Moon offering coming up in Christmas, that's where we, the Southern Baptists, have their big push for missions. And we want to remember that and be a part of that missionary giving. Remember the people on the back row. They're out there, and they're people who need, even especially today, they're not received as readily as they used to be in the foreign field. And we need to supply all the help we can in prayer and in giving at least, and maybe even in going for some of us, to follow the example of Paul and to follow the direction and the command of our Lord when he said, go into all the world, not just Twin Lakes.